Hello, everyone, and welcome to End of Life University Podcast, where we share real talk about life and death. I'm your host, as always, Dr. Karen Wyatt, and I want to thank you for joining me here today for episode number 326. In just a moment, I'll be sharing an interview I did with Chase Cassine, who is a person I had a great time talking with Chase. We really hit it off together. He's a clinical social worker who works at a community health center, and he's written a cookbook called The Sweetest Therapy, which was really a grief project for him after the death of his mother. We'll talk all about that in the interview, but the reason I'm broadcasting this interview today, this Monday, is the beginning of Thanksgiving week here in the U.S. And so this topic is really designed to encourage all of us as we're sitting down for the holidays with or without our loved ones, depending on if we're able to travel or not or be together, that we think about the grief that we're carrying with us and the pain that is with us and spend some time processing that and using the holidays as a good time to work through some of those feelings. And so Chase and I will talk a little bit about that in the interview. Before I start playing the interview, I want to thank my two newest supporters on my Patreon page, Martha Wolf and Maggie Dial. Thank you, Martha and Maggie, for signing up. And you are contributing to my new goal of getting 25 new subscribers in order to help offset the cost of providing a transcript for every one of these podcast episodes, which I'm hoping to get started right away. So now we only need 23 more subscribers on my page at patreon.com/EOLU. If you're interested in joining the team, go to that URL. You'll find all about the tiers of membership to belong and some of the bonuses that you'll receive when you sign up. So once again, thank you, Martha and Maggie, and thanks also to everyone who's been supporting the podcast for years and months. I appreciate you so very much. So that being said, we'll move on to the interview with Chase Cassine. I hope you enjoy it. I meant for this to be a little more hopeful and lighthearted interview as we go into the holiday season. I really enjoyed talking to Chase. So as always, stay tuned afterwards. I'll come back with a few takeaways and to say goodbye. So here we go. Today, I'm so happy to welcome my guest, Chase Cassine. Chase is a licensed clinical social worker with a Master of Social Work degree from Southern University at New Orleans. He provides individual therapy at a local community health clinic where he assists clients through grief, loss, depression, anxiety, adjustment issues, and communication issues. He is also a self-taught baker and a proud New Orleans native. He's a lover of the city's eclectic culture, baking mouthwatering desserts and spreading self-empowerment to others, both professionally and personally. Chase is the author of the debut cookbook, The Sweetest Therapy, and we'll be talking all about that today. And you can follow Chase on Instagram. Look up his name, Chase Cassine, C-A-S-S-I-N-E. So Chase, welcome, and thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me, Karen. I'm really excited about this interview. When you reached out to me, you know, before, during Hurricane Ida, and you sent your positive vibrations about overcoming that, we overcame that. You reached out to me again, and I said, we're good to go. We set the date, and I'm here.
Yes, and I'm so excited because we've subsequently found out we have a lot in common, actually, from the past, and so from our work, at least. And so I'm so excited for the conversation we're about to have. And I wanted to ask you a little bit about your work as a therapist at a local community health center, because I myself, as in addition to my hospice work, I was the medical director at a community health center as well, and I'm really passionate about that work. And what I experienced is that so many of our patients at that clinic were dealing with grief, sometimes years and years of grief that they had never had the opportunity to heal. And I'm just curious to know if you've encountered that as well in your work, and just to have you talk a little bit about the work you do with patients.
Okay, well, the work that I do with my patients at DePaul Community Health Center in New Orleans, the reason why I chose to work at DePaul, I just got my certificate in October, been there 2 years, and it feels like yesterday. It does not feel like work at all. But the reason why I enjoy and I pick DePaul and working there is because they believe in the integrated care model, which is about looking at the whole person, physically, mentally, everything, emotionally, spiritually, all those different things, because you're looking at the whole person. I need to look at you holistically, treat you holistically. And often when having all services in one place, it's where a person, if I go to my PCP, although I'm going there for diabetes, I might begin to open up about how I lost my mom, how I may be using illicit substances. And the PCP can then send a referral to the therapist, me, Chase, and sometimes we'll even have what's called warm handoffs, where if I'm not in a session with a client and I have free time, I can then go in that patient's room and introduce myself so they can, okay, this is the therapist you want to introduce, that you want me to meet with, and just give them a little introduction, and they can put that face with a name, and that can kind of ease that, because it's like, you want me to go talk to somebody else about what I just talked to you about? You know, people can be a little apprehensive about therapy and opening up to a stranger or, so, you know, another person they have to tell their business to. So even with doing those warm handoffs, I know that has kind of eased their anxiety about having to come to therapy. Then it also lessens what we talked about earlier, just a little briefly, about how if patients have to go somewhere else, it may be a longer wait time, or they may have barriers to transportation. So having everything all in one house serves not only the agency, but it serves the people we serve, that what it's about, that they can get everything like a one-stop shop. That's the best way to conceptualize it. And in working with the patients at the DePaul Community Health Center, my niche areas, depression, anxiety, adjustment issues, transition issues. I enjoy working with teens and up, but also grief. So I noticed that grief was a common theme in working with a lot of the patients there.
Yes, and I was just so excited when I read that you're part of an integrated model clinic, because that's the clinic that I worked at as well, with counselors on site that could be brought in the room to meet with patients immediately. And I'm so passionate and excited about that model. And I know you are too, because when you work in the middle of it, you see how effective it is, and that really it's the way we should be offering all healthcare everywhere. All of it should be integrated so that we meet the needs of the whole person everywhere they go, whether they're in the emergency room or a clinic or a specialist's office. We should be looking at each patient as a whole person.
Yes, most definitely. And it can improve the health outcomes. If we're looking at numbers, it can improve. If research has stated, it can improve health outcomes for the clients or patients, you know, in the communities that we service. So I do believe that it should be all over. I agree, Karen.
Well, yeah, so we're both excited and passionate about that we share that kind of work together, but then also share a story of grief. And I know that grief has played a role for you personally, yes, in the work you're doing. And so I wondered if you would share with our listeners a little bit about your story of grief.
My story of grief. Yes. Just to piggyback a little bit off of what you said, we definitely do have a shared story, as we all do. Grief is a universal experience that we all experience. But what brought me to this point in my journey is I lost my mother July 14, 2017, the day after her birthday, after a long battle with breast cancer. And it left me feeling just so just confused, not knowing where to go. You know, I was dealing with a lot of things, emotional eating. I was in the midst of clinical supervision, working a full-time job. I worked at a crisis line. I did that work. I love that work. I did that work from 2014 to 2019. So I did that work for 5 years, just in trying to navigate. You know, we live in a society where we often minimize grief or treat it like a dirty secret. We don't want to talk about death or dying or any of that. You know, if we do talk about it, we minimize it to the umpteenth power. So it left me feeling a void, feeling it's painful. It left me feeling very traumatized. I did go to therapy, and that was the best thing ever. And so often we would think as providers where, you know, I don't need therapy. I don't need that, you know. We think we have like this kind of, in a way, a superhero type complex. And it's like, no. And the best thing my therapist told me in going to therapy for a year was vulnerability is strength. And it's in telling your story how it can impact and empower someone else. But I also want to tell you this too. Even as my mother was going through her battle with breast cancer and all the different bringing her to our appointments and stuff, my sister and I and other family members who helped, my mama said something that always sticks with me. She said to never cry without hope. And then that led me to also getting into affirmations. And there's an affirmation that I say that I will persist and persevere, because to persevere is to remain hopeful, even though things don't look, it's just all over the place, or you're facing this adversity. But when you persist and persevere, it means you have some hope. Even if it's an ounce of hope, it's still hope. So, yeah.
And Chase, do you feel like your own personal grief experience has made you a better counselor for your patients who are dealing with grief?
You know what? Karen, that's a really great question. It has. Even before I lost my mom, I have experienced losing other close family members. And I've always, the universe is so interesting. I've always been a person where whenever somebody has passed away, they will always reach out to me. Even before being a licensed counselor, even before going to school for psychology, just always being there for people, holding that space for them and understanding, just also honestly viewing death, not viewing it as in a negative light, that it is the way I embrace life and everything that comes with life, the ups, the downs, the journey of it all. I view life as a journey, and that death is just a part of the journey, you know, that's how I view it. But of course, and I've always viewed it as that way. So that has always made me very empathetic to the grieving. So, of course, in losing my own mom, it made me more empathetic. And then it just was always my niche area. I always wanted three things I always wanted to be. I wanted to be a counselor. I wanted to be a chef at one point, a pastry chef. And then, this is funny, ironically, I wanted to be a funeral director. So, but what I find funny is how the universe has a way of, I became a therapist who loves to bake, who specializes in grief. And I wrote the food therapy.
Yeah. So here it is. It is amazing, isn't it? How things always come together. The pieces of the puzzle end up all fitting together perfectly. Mm-hmm. Well, I did want to ask you about the baking, because in The Sweetest Therapy, you write, of course, about how baking was part of your healing journey from your grief. So please tell our listeners about that and how you started using baking, or I don't even know when you started baking, but I know it became part of the therapy you used for yourself.
Yes. So baking. All right. What brought me? Because that's always a burning question. People have, well, I was always a baker. Like, I liked baking, but it would be like things from scratch, like not from scratch, though. It would be box things and stuff. So, but people always would enjoy them, like brownies and stuff or whatever. Brownies or, you know, box cakes and stuff, things like that. So I did that. But as I was mourning the loss of my mother in 2017, I read this article. And the title of the article is, I'm envisioning and saying it's like it was yesterday. Then I got a great memory. 12 Ways to Cope with Grief After Losing a Loved One by Erin Ward. And on the list, she had some really great things. Like, she had traveling. She had writing. I'm gonna talk about writing in a second. And she had learning a new skill. So when the learning and the new skill and the writing, I've always been a writer. I love writing. English class, never had no issues in English class, always A's and B's. I enjoy writing, and I always found writing to be cathartic. So envisioning, I'm going to write a book one day about something. I always said that. But the learning a new skill, I said, okay, what's a skill that I have that I can sharpen and maybe just stretch myself a little? So I was like, you know what? I like baking, but you know what? I'm baking stuff from the box. I think I could push myself to bake from scratch. So in The Sweetest Therapy, I talk about that. I talk about how I said, I went out and I was telling my friends and my family and stuff. I said, I think I'm gonna learn how to bake from scratch. And so family members and stuff, they were like, well, we're gonna buy you some stuff, because they wanted to see me, you know, feel a little better and stuff. And I appreciate that. So they went out and bought me, like, my grandmother bought me some pans and stuff, and my cousin ordered measuring cups and all these kind of things. And I said, I'm gonna buy me a KitchenAid. But the way my fund's set up right now, I gotta wait till around. Was also, as I'm talking to you, I actually bought my KitchenAid, and it's blue. My favorite color is blue. I bought my KitchenAid on Veterans Day because they had a really good sale at Macy's. And I bought the KitchenAid on Veterans Day, and I said, I'm going to teach myself. So on November the 14th of 2017, I started my baking journey. And I got my books. I got this. Well, as you will read in The Sweetest Therapy, I had a lot of failed attempts, but I was determined to persist and persevere. So I started baking. I got in the kitchen, and it just became therapeutic for me. After working a long day at work, you know, maybe, again, any job working with people can be stressful, and just taking on maybe some of their things that they have, or, you know, trying to divert crisis, because I work a crisis line, so trying to alleviate and advocate for people, and getting home and getting into a space within my home in the least expected venue that you would think of healing, in my kitchen. Because in just the same way, like cooking, baking is a form of mindfulness where you have to, I can't think about everything that was going on all at work or what. I can't think about a million different things. I need to be present in the moment. So it really taught me mindfulness of being still, being in the moment, and that helped to reduce a lot of the anxiety, and it made me feel better, because then people would come over, I could share what I baked with them, and of course them saying it tastes good and stuff made me feel better, and just having that community aspect too helped.
Yeah, I love that. I love, so it's the action of baking itself, doing the work, but then the rewards afterwards. And and it also seems like it's a reminder that life is still sweet, even though we're in pain and we're grieving and suffering. There's still so much sweetness in life. And when you can share that with another person, then that brings you the community that you need to heal grief as well. So it's really a beautiful combination, and something it never occurred to me before, that baking could could be a form of therapy, but it actually seems like the perfect therapy when I think about it.
Yeah, listen, it never occurred to me either. All right, you know, I'm a person, I told you, I'm a writer, and I always enjoy writing. I also enjoy reading. I also read an article. I forgot to mention the article. The second article I read was about the psychological benefits of baking. Because when I said, is baking therapeutic? Is it really therapeutic? And that's when I came across the Huffington Post article that did talk about the psychological benefits of baking. Then recently I saw a post where Tom Jones was talking about how baking has helped him, and other celebrities have talked about cooking and baking, how that has been therapy for them too. So what I think the life lesson in it all is, we sometimes will search for things so big for healing, but it can be something very, which that you may look over, that can be so simple, so small to, you know, to other, may seem so simple and so small, but yet be so transformative and healing.
Yeah, simple and small and hands-on. And mm-hmm. And I was thinking about all the stories I read last year during the lockdown for the pandemic, mm-hmm. of how many people started making sourdough bread at home, or I think a lot of people started baking and cooking more. And that all makes sense to me now, that that was really therapeutic for people who were going through a traumatic time.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Before I wrote The Sweetest Therapy, I said, well, let me just do a little research and see if they have, you know, if a therapist has written about the therapeutic aspects of baking or cooking or anything. And I saw a book called Bread Therapy, The Mindful Art of Baking, and it's by a counselor. And I said, okay, I'm on to something. It's by Pauline Beaumont. Yeah, I think I'm saying it right. And I said, okay, I'm on to something. And she was talking about it. And then, like you said, just the lockdown, how people began cooking and baking. I have a cousin. She, during the pandemic, she said, I want to get into cooking. And so I told her, I said, you learning more about cooking, that became your sweetest therapy. Because in essence, the sweetest therapy, it's about finding your sweetest therapy to help you cope with things in life, with the rough patches. Because we all have rough patches, but it's about you finding that sweet spot to help you cope with the stresses of life. So whether it's cooking, whether it's journaling, dancing, singing, gardening, connecting with nature, whatever, that's your sweetest therapy. Just finding some healthier ways to cope with life's problems.
And I love that that's the title of the book, The Sweetest Therapy. And that, as you say, it could be anything, mm-hmm. anything creative that we do, or something yeah. new we decide to learn. But it ties in so well with your book of recipes, and so much more than just recipes. In this cookbook, it's so much more than that, because you talk about grief, you offer your advice for people grieving and affirmations, plus pictures of New Orleans, the city that you love so much, and then also some of the history of New Orleans. It's just, the book is really rich and full of so much information and so much that you have to share.
And, you know, as I began working on The Sweetest Therapy with Ross Williams, that's the publisher I use, and he also was a very great coach and guide through this process. I told him, I said, I want to do a cookbook, because he always will see me baking and stuff. He said, come on, I can see you doing it. I said, but this is the twist I want to do. I said, I want it to be a cookbook. Of course, I'm a baker. I said, but there's the therapeutic aspect to baking that I want to add to it. I want to give them some grief advice, some counsel from a licensed clinical social worker and therapist. I said, but you know, there's another thing I want to add to it. I said, I'm also passionate about history too, about my New Orleans history and culture. So from there, I said, to conceptualize it and in three sentences, I said, I want it to be sweet to the palate, therapeutic to the soul with a New Orleans twist. It has to be different. I love different things. It has to be different. So I don't want it to just be a regular cookbook or, you know, I want it to, and it encompasses three things that I'm very passionate about.
Yes. And it's really beautiful in that way because it's touching in so many ways, and yet it has great recipes in it and your advice for making the recipes or even the story behind the recipe. Mm-hmm. Like I think your nanny's banana pudding. Oh my gosh, that sounds wonderful. I need to try that recipe.
Oh, nanny's banana pudding. Listen, it's so good. That, you know, and again, with the recipes, I didn't want it to just have, okay, here's a picture of the banana pudding and here's just the recipe, step one, step two, step three. No, I want to give you a little story because there's stories behind, and I handpicked, listen, the process, Karen, the process with me narrowing down these recipes, it took about 2 months. Honestly, because I had 50 recipes, then I'm like, no, I have to narrow it down, of course, you know, because I do plan on writing other books, but I need to narrow it down and I need to have the stories need to resonate with it. Like this Nanny's Banana Pudding talks about my grandmother, Althea Martin, who got this recipe from her grandmother, Hilda Jones. Just giving y'all a little insider in how this was passed down. To me, my grandmother would often be in the kitchen making this on a Saturday or a Sunday when we would get together and stuff for she, myself, and my grandfather, Horace, and just watching old movies because they liked watching cowboy movies all the time. We watch cowboy movies and Food Network along with old movies like Gone with the Wind and stuff. I talk about that on another recipe that brings me down memory lane with certain things. So it also was a trip down memory lane too for me. And I wanted it to be that way.
I think that's another therapeutic aspect of baking or cooking too, is if we use our family recipes that have been handed down because we're honoring our loved ones and our ancestors and keeping those traditions alive. And there's so much value in that.
Yes. Yes, because we want to honor them. So often, you know, like I said before, we live in a culture, society where we want to minimize grief and just act as if, you know, it's nothing major. You know, we want to be so stoic. People die. It is what it is. Like just being basically treating people disposable, that they're not disposable, that they may no longer be here in physical body, but we can still find ways to pay homage, to honor them, to still celebrate them and still connect and still talk about them. Research, again, you know, I'm naturally a researcher, that I think about Gestalt therapy. Gestalt therapy has what's called the empty chair technique. It's where you may have some unresolved issues with a person and that you look at the chair and you begin to talk to them as if they're that person. Science has also just said recently, was in this article in Teen Vogue, that said acknowledging the deceased and talking to them as if they're still here is good for your mental health. So when we celebrate them, are we talking about sharing memories in the kitchen? You know, even if you're not cooking, a lot of times when I was in the kitchen with my grandmother, I wasn't cooking, I wasn't helping her with anything, but we were talking and she was telling me about the history of New Orleans and stuff, or history behind this recipe she's using. And talking about her grandmother, that was therapeutic for her too, because she missed her grandmother tremendously. She was a person who helped her with raising my dad as a single parent and stuff. So she was talking about her, and it made me feel like, you know, I knew her and it made me feel good and stuff. So we both walked away feeling really good. And it could also help with a person maybe feeling bluesy, having some holiday blues and talking about them. Makes them feel better, because in suppressing it, you're just going to give yourself more anxiety because it's going to resurface.
Oh, exactly. And this interview will air on the week of Thanksgiving, the U.S. Thanksgiving. And so I think as we're going into this holiday season, it's an important thing to remember. Mm-hmm. All of us are likely to have some grief feelings come up around the holidays for loved ones who've died. But baking and cooking it's just a wonderful way to honor those memories, mm-hmm. and it's therapeutic for the grief that we're feeling. And so I wanted to have this conversation right now, this time of year, because I think it is such a special reminder for people. Dig through your recipe box, find those dishes that you used to have when you were a child that your grandmother made for you, and bring back those memories and feel that love and honor and connection again with the loved ones who are no longer with us.
Yes, yes. And even if you begin to cry, that it's okay, we're human, that it's a, we have, like, I will often have this thing, and it will make a lot of my clients laugh when I would say, you know, they'll have their moment where they're crying and say, I'm sorry, I don't mean to cry. I say, it's okay to cry. I say, crying is, that's healing. I said, it's cathartic. I said, which basically means it's a release. So you're releasing that, you're getting it out, because you may have been in spaces where you couldn't cry. So this is a space, this is a safe space. That's why you begin to cry. And you're not a robot, so go ahead on and cry.
The kitchen's a good place to cry.
It's like the kitchen has been often in so many families, the therapist couch. Mm-hmm. That's how I look at it. I know it was for me, and I know for so many other people as well. You know what, I do feel better when I baked or cooked something. You know, a lot of my family are they are cooks. They are great cooks, like a lot of them. So I'm really the baker in my family. But it's like, yeah, you know what? I said, because that's your sweetest therapy. You know, because that was a question a lot of people would pose to me about, you know, I don't bake. I said, the sweetest therapy is not just about, it's not about baking. It's about finding a healthy way to cope. You know, I say, because I'm shining a light on a universal experience, all right, that we all will experience at one point or another. You know, it has affirmations. It also has the history of New Orleans culture in here. So it's all wrapped into one. I even will coin it as a curative cookbook that is healing in these pages. It's healing. This is a transformative journey. And it's also a personal. I also wanted to give that personal perspective. You know, so often in being a therapist, we talk about a lot about self-disclosure, but the NASW also says in the rule, a lot of the rules, you know, if it's clinically relevant, and I felt that in me telling my story, my personal story, that was some good professional insight to give, you know, as well as giving that professional insight, but I wanted to give that personal disclosure of I too have experienced a traumatic loss and am still navigating grief, but I can have some tools to help you navigate it. And we can navigate it together as well.
I love that you told the story of in the beginning, trying to make pound cake and, having like failing at it six times before you had a successful pound cake. And I think that's a really good lesson for all of us too, even dealing with grief, is that it isn't magical that your grief will disappear when you do one thing or try one thing. Yes. It's a process, and we have to keep persevering, and we have to keep working at it. And maybe it changes a little each time, but we have to keep going. And that story was a good reminder. I was telling you before we started recording that you have a recipe for pecan pie in The Sweetest Therapy. And that's something I've tried to make over and over again, and I've failed every single time. So I've given up on trying to make it, but now you've inspired me that maybe I just need to keep going and keep trying.
I think now with the recipe I have provided to you and many others in The Sweetest Therapy for that pecan pie, I think you needed the right recipe. I think with the recipe in The Sweetest Therapy, that the pecan pie, you may have had failed attempts, like I did with the pound cake, as you read in The Sweetest Therapy, But I like that I'm hearing that, you know what, I'm going to give it another chance. I'm going to give it a try. Because maybe it's where baking is so, I'm going to tell you this, baking is very, people often say it's temperamental. I say, no, it's not temperamental. It's an art and it's also a science. So maybe it's where maybe we were not measuring the sugar correctly, or maybe the eggs weren't room temperature. All those different things, maybe the oven wasn't preheated, you know? So sometimes it's where those things, those different factors can affect the outcome, because we may be rushing. I'm going to go back to the pound cake recipe and just make it make sense. A lot of times with me trying to make those pound cakes, I was rushing the process. And I like how you also tied it into grief. I didn't even think about that when I wrote the book, but I like how you just said it, because I was rushing my process. I wasn't allowing my butter to get room temperature. I wasn't allowing my oven to preheat correctly. I wasn't allowing my flour to be measured correctly. So I was trying to rush my process. But when I allowed myself to just step back and follow the directions, also learning more about baking, that, okay, you have to allow things to be room temperature, and now baking is chemistry, and that the oven needs to be preheated correctly and things need to be measured correctly for you to have a positive, AKA a tasty, moist outcome, that you have to go through the process. And I was just thinking when I wrote the book, I just was thinking about how, in the terms of, or the perspective of, how I didn't give up after one failed attempt. But I like how you just said it, not rushing, basically not rushing your process as you're grieving.
And it seems like from the story I read, that seventh pound cake, which turned out just right, was almost like a turning point of inspiration for you, because I read that you shared it with people and then everyone wanted to buy pound cake from you because it was so good.
Yes. When I made that pound cake, it was so funny. Of course I shared in the Sweetest Therapy, where that seventh time I was like, I know this is the right time. And when I went to cut into it, I said, oh yeah, this is it. So me and my best friend, Sierra, who wrote the foreword in the book, we enjoyed that pound cake. And then my neighbors also too, having that, my neighbors and everybody, they were just like, oh, this is so good. So then when I posted it on social media, I was just like, I'm proud of myself. And what I also love about social media too is I call a lot of my friends on my Facebook and stuff, I call them my Facebook community, because I'm really big on Facebook. I'm on Instagram, but I'm really big on Facebook. I call them my Facebook community. I said community because it's made up of so many different people, all walks of life, every type of person. I love it. So they were like, oh, Chase, this is so good. You know what? We know you've started baking. And can we start placing orders? I said, placing orders. I'm just proud that I'm proud of myself. And people talking about placing orders. And so it was up from there. That was a turning point.
Yeah, because it seems like it all started coming together then, even the idea for creating the cookbook. And so I love that story. And actually, I want to buy a pound cake myself. I'll check with you about that later, but because the picture looks amazing that's in the cookbook.
We will definitely, thank you so much, Karen. We'll definitely talk about that. I love your feedback though.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it looks delicious, and I love pound cake. So I know I would like yours, but do you have a favorite recipe in your cookbook?
You want to know what my favorite recipe is? On the cover of the book, I'm a brownie a la mode connoisseur. I'm simple. I love all the recipes in the book, but that brownie a la mode, I had to, again, like I told you, the book represents me. So like even the colors that I picked out for the book, the title of the book, all those things I picked out, that all those things by design. And I love a Grand a la mode. It's something about that chocolate fudginess and the vanilla. It's just a good, and then the chocolate syrup on top of it, and sometimes whipped cream. That's my favorite.
And the cold ice cream on top of the brownie.
A warm brownie out the oven, because I like it like that.
All right. This is making me really hungry. Well, I also want to, there's some things I want to ask you also beyond the recipes, because at the end of the book, you include information about some history from New Orleans, which is really wonderful, things I've never heard about or read about before. And throughout the book, you have photographs from New Orleans that are amazing. I assume some are from Mardi Gras.
Finish.
I was just wondering if that's what they're from, or scenes from New Orleans.
Actually, some were from scenes from New Orleans. And we were, before we started our interview, you definitely wanted to ask about the New Orleans culture section. That definitely piqued your interest. So as I stated, you know, previously throughout the interview, that I wanted it to not just be a regular cookbook. It had to be things that I'm passionate about. So in my journey through grief, often it would have me isolating myself, and I did a lot of emotional eating. I was over 200 pounds. I was 212 pounds, actually. That was the highest weight I had ever been, all right? I had never been that, but just with being a caretaker and just going through the process, even before my mom passed away, just with the emotional eating and just working, just not really having no really good eating habits. So my weight ballooned, right? So we have in New Orleans, we have what's called second lines. And second lines grew out of actually funerals. And basically what will happen is we will have funerals here. The first line will be made up of the family behind the hearse. And then the second line would be the mourners that would gather, and they would have the band and stuff playing music, because New Orleans is a city where we celebrate life, even at death. We still want to celebrate that person's life. So out of that culture, out of something really sad, funerals and stuff, that then even became reframed to something positive, where we can still, although this person is no longer physically here, we're going to still celebrate that life that lived. So we're going to have people begin to revel in the streets and have fun. So we have second line groups, which grew out of the benevolent associations and societies here in New Orleans. And so different associations in my book, before the Sweetest Lanyap, that association that I took a picture of, that was for Sudan Second Line Club, Sudan Social Aid and Pleasure Club. That's a second line club here in New Orleans with the blue on and stuff. Before the Sweetest Lanyap, I love their second line. They're actually having a second line Sunday. And it's a time where people, again, come together of all walks of life. We have fun. And it also helped me with shedding those 50 pounds with walking. Because it's a lot of walking, but you don't even notice that you didn't walk 3.5 miles because you're with friends and family, and again, fighting through that depression that's telling you to isolate, isolate, isolate. No, I'm going to get up and I'm going to go to the second line and I'm going to connect with other people, because you need that. And I need to also walk. And it helped me with also getting my eating habits together. Like, I'm going to stick to, because that was another thing, trying to stick to healthier eating, which is a journey, but it's like being mindful of what you're putting in your body. So even with the baking, you got to be mindful of our portions as well. That taught me that too. Mindfulness has definitely been a lesson.
So the second line, so that's really interesting that there are like people belong to a certain club or group.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then, and now it sounds like the second lines form around all kinds of events or causes, not just funerals alone.
Yes. Yep. Throughout the year, like they'll have one almost every Sunday. Almost every Sunday we will have one. You know, COVID, of course, stopped a lot of us having second lines and stuff due to COVID-19, but we're getting back to that tradition of having, of hearing that those our brass bands and seeing people with their, we call it footwork, their dance and their dance. I'm gonna send you, email you some videos. And I also showcase my cousin, who's also a really talented second liner. I have his picture on the Sweetest Lanyap, as well as in the Sweetest Affirmations, as well as other people at different second lines from the second line parades in throughout the book, to showcase that New Orleans culture and stuff, because it's so important, and just trying to keep the culture alive too. And just again, it's all representative of me. Things I'm passionate and love that will still be here. This book will still be here when I'm no longer here and my journey is complete. That these three things I'm passionate about, New Orleans culture, baking, and my love for mental health. I love to empower people. So if it took for me to tell my story, my authentic story, not nothing watered down, not nothing sanitized, my story, and it could help somebody, even if it helped one person. But what was amazing about it was when the book first came out, I sold 1,500 copies in 1 week.
Wow.
That outdone my goal, because I was like, I had done research that most self-published authors, you know, maybe like 200 to 300 copies. I was okay with that. I was like, if I sell one copy, I'll be like one copy. But 1,500 copies, over 1,500 copies in 1 week, that really, and then so many people were connecting with me, and it was like, this is what I need. This is really what I need. Some people were DMing me on social media, on Instagram, and like, your book really helped me. I just lost my mom, you know, and I'm reading it, and just how transparent you are with, even though you're a therapist. I said, I'm a therapist, but I'm still a person though too.
Yeah, it is. It's a beautiful book. And I love that it's really grounding. Like, it brings us kind of back to earth, you know, mm-hmm. with just baking and food and being in the kitchen, but then also the traditions and the stories and the New Orleans culture that you share. It's all so rich, and it feels so connected, I guess I want to say, connected mm-hmm. with the past, so that for those of us going through grief who sometimes feel like we're all alone and we're isolated, I think your book is such a good reminder that no, it's actually, our grief is one of the things that connects us to everyone, everyone who's alive right now and everyone who's ever been alive.
Yes, it is. It brings us together, that it doesn't have to isolate us. It doesn't have to make us isolate and not want to connect with other people. Let's connect. Let's not allow, because that's the depression that's telling you to isolate, and, you know, other people don't care. And sometimes it's where people can have experienced, like, you know, disenfranchised grief, where we can grieve so many things. Of, it doesn't have to necessarily be, I lost my mom. Okay, it could be where you lost your pet. That's still a loss. Grieving the loss of a pet, grieving the loss of a good friend, a cousin, even if it's a distant cousin, you guys were close, whatever. Just even the loss, grieving a job, grieving a marriage that has now ended. All those different things, we can grieve all those different things, in that our grief is what connects us.
Yeah, and I love the idea of baking as therapy for our grief, and at least sharing what we bake with other people.
Yes.
It feels like a way that we're sharing the grief, and we don't necessarily just, mm-hmm. we're not necessarily just asking other people to listen to our story or carry the grief with us, but we're offering something. We're offering them something that we can share, that we share together, like by eating pound cake together, and just the conversation that might arise as we're sharing that.
Yes. Just that connection. Because as human beings, we need social connections with others. And you just said a word, a buzzword, sharing. Oh, sharing that grief, sharing that pain, holding that space for another person and sharing a cooked meal or sharing a slice of pound cake or Nanny's banana pudding or any other sweet treats in the sweetest therapy. But just sharing that, that's power.
And you wrote in the book too that baking, first of all, like we've already talked about this, baking helps with mindfulness, but that it also helps you feel more gratitude. And I think that's another state that's very healing in times of grief, if you can get to a point of feeling gratitude.
Mm-hmm. There was this thing, I think I was watching Oprah, or I forgot where I was. I was watching something, and it said, just naming five things every day you're grateful for. It don't matter. You're grateful that you got your lights on. You're grateful that you have reliable transportation. You're grateful to be alive. Just find something, because, again, in going through depression and even with having anxiety sometimes, those are all negative mindsets. And it'll be where you're just stuck in the fog and just can't really see any type of light or anything. But just finding something to be grateful for, finding something to be grateful for, that I'm okay, another day here, part of my journey, and that I can choose my day. I often will tell my clients that people don't ruin your day. A lot of times we allow other people to ruin our day, or we will ruin our day. That we can have a moment that may be ruined, but we still have the power and the capacity to change that. That maybe let's look at redirecting that. Maybe let's name some things we're just grateful for, some gratitude, because that can also help. Gratitude. Me, I'm grateful. Also, just speaking for me, I'm grateful into being able to tell my story. The sweetest therapy was actually in transparency. I wanted to write this book. I wanted to in 2017, but it wasn't the right time. I still was going through my process. See, I was trying to rush. It wasn't the process. It wasn't the right time. And I had to learn to trust the process, and that when it was the right time, that it would came out. The book was also, add this on too, the book was supposed to come out December of last year, but I didn't feel it was the right time. No, October, then I pushed it back again. And then I said, May is special to me for three reasons. May is Mother's Day. May is my birthday. My birthday is in May, May 25th. And also, May is Mental Health Awareness Month. So that's when the book is going to be released.
That's perfect. So yeah, so just like the first 6 pound cakes, you were trying to rush the book out to the world. And I think that that's just a good lesson for all of us in anything that we're doing, is sometimes the timing has to be right and all the ingredients have to be there and have to be right for something to actually happen and actually take place. And obviously it was the right thing. Just like the 7th pound cake was turned out right. The book came out at the right time because it was instantly popular and sold so many copies. And I've seen write-ups about you and the book, you know, in various publications too. So it seemed like you've met a need that people have with the sweetest therapy.
Yeah. And I think also what heightened it was COVID-19. So many people, I mean, millions throughout the world, you know, passed away. So that's millions of people left grieving. That's somebody's son, somebody's daughter, somebody's friend, somebody's spouse, somebody's something, you know, co-worker, whatever it is, that leaves a lot of people grieving. So I felt that it was in me waiting. I didn't want to, again, because I know what, when you rush, whenever you rush and do something, you never get the good, you never get the results that you may, you know, if I rush and do this, I'm going to get envisioning that's going to result this way, and you're not going to get good results. So me having to wait and remembering my, you know, 6 failed attempts with my pound cake from rushing, that, you know what, I'm going to wait for this to come out and then it came out at the right time. The timing, because again, timing is everything. So I allowed the universe to guide me with that. I was like, no, it's not going to come out right now. No, it's not. I'm going to wait. And in me waiting, that also allowed me to be more patient and again, practicing that mindfulness. And it worked out how it was supposed to work out.
Yeah. And I'd like to think that's true for this interview too, which I had wanted to take place earlier in the year, but I happened to contact you during Hurricane Ida, which was a clear sign that that wasn't the right time. So now here we are, and it's right around the holidays, which I think is just the right timing for this conversation to be shared with the world.
Exactly. It's definitely the right time. And that's why I had to mention that of us connecting. We've been supposed to have this interview, you know, in our minds, but then just again, Hurricane Ida, just other things. But the holiday times, let's bring people together in cooking and baking. It's also, you know, a lot of times, which the holiday times can be very bittersweet, thinking about people who have passed away. Then sometimes other people will pass away a lot around this time too. So just in getting together and connecting with others in their grief and sharing in the kitchen, it's something least, come on, you can find happiness in a bag of flour. I did. So it's where you can connect with other people and ground yourself and just connect, have that connection and heal through the pain.
Yeah. Oh, I think that's just beautiful. And it's the sweetest therapy. And it's really simple therapy. It's really something simple that all of us could do. Mm-hmm. So I just want to encourage everyone listening out there to think about that. What recipe could you pull out and make this holiday season that would be a tribute to those you love and even a way of celebrating them, but also celebrating life, like
yes,
get the most out of life and make it be the sweetest thing possible.
Yes. 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 I definitely agree. And I definitely think there are many different recipes. Another thing that sometimes people would get scared with when I first was talking about the book and stuff, it was like, you know, I don't know, those recipes might be complicated. I said, they're simple. These recipes, they can, an amateur baker as well as a professional baker can make these recipes alike, but they're very simple. I offer baking tips. You know, a lot of the things that I had written in my notebook that I learned in watching, a lot of stuff I learned from Food Network, but also YouTube, and as well as reading various cooking books and stuff. And I said, well, you know what, I want to make this a true guide to where, okay, I'm going to offer, you know, my baker's dozen of baking tips. You know, I gave you some baking tips that will help in guiding you in the kitchen. You know, it's almost like I'm there. So you don't have to be, I'm not on Chopped. I desire to go on Chopped one day, or baking something, but I'm not on Chopped. So my recipes are simple. And they're also classic recipes. I mean, I know you asked me what was my favorite one, but I'm also give you my second favorite. It's the sour cream top cheesecake. There was a place here in New Orleans called McKenzie's. It was a bakery. And they sold the sour cream top cheesecake. And it, when I made it for the photo shoot for the book, it brought me down. It gave me so many feelings of nostalgia of going there with my grandmother and stuff and getting the cheesecake. My grandmother loved cheesecake. She loved desserts and stuff too. So we would get that and just thinking about us watching Gone with the Wind for like the umpteenth time. And that movie is like 4 hours. Buck and the Preacher, all kinds of movies we would watch and stuff. A lot of times people tell me I'm an old soul. I feel like I am. So, and watching those different things and just, it brought so many feelings of nostalgia. Then also it felt good for when I was doing, having the photo shoot, I had my cousin Jennifer who did the food styling. She's so talented. My best friend Tiara who did the forward, she was here helping, and then the photographer, Devante, he and I are cool. They were enjoying the sweets, which my sister, Trishelle, she was here, and then my neighbor, Keyshawn, they were enjoying the sweets and stuff. Because I was like, I'm not about to be eating all of this. So I'm sharing. Of course, I'm sharing it. I'm not, because that's another thing that helped me with my weight loss journey. Sharing. I'm not eating all of this. No, I saw what it can do. So I'm sharing everything. I'll take one little piece. And so often when I bake stuff, Karen, I'm not eating. I'll eat like one thing. I'm satisfied seeing other people enjoy it. And that makes me feel good.
Yeah, that's such a good reminder. Well, so yeah. It sounds like the cookbook itself was a kind of a community effort too, because you had a lot of people who love you and care about you who were part of putting it together.
Yes. And I'm so appreciative and thankful for them. But yeah, it was that community aspect too, with putting the cookbook together. It was. It definitely, I appreciate them.
Well, Chase, where can listeners get a hold of the cookbook?
The cookbook is available on Amazon, as well as Barnes & Noble's and Target. It is on sale right now on Amazon. So definitely go on Amazon, search The Sweetest Therapy, and get it. I believe that it is an awesome curative cookbook. There's healing throughout the pages of the book. You will laugh, you may cry, but you're going to end on a good note of feeling. You'll walk away feeling much better than you did before. And you got some sweet treats in there.
Yeah, and I would say, because it's on sale on Amazon, buy two copies. Yes. Because you can keep one. And I think it would be a great gift for someone that you know who's dealing with grief. I think it's something nice that you could give someone the cookbook and a set of measuring cups or something, you know, as something different that people don't usually receive when they're going through grief. But it's just a different perspective on grief, and it's really beautiful. So I'd love to see you get a lot more sales of the book right now.
Yes. I think two copies would be good since it's on sale. You're right. Yes. Most definitely.
Well, Chase, it's so much fun talking to you. I love that we discovered so many commonalities between us. Yes. And I've really enjoyed our conversation and love your book, The Sweetest Therapy. And I'm so glad we've connected. And yes, I'm looking forward to seeing your next book and trying more of your recipes in the future.
Hey, Karen, I'm so glad we connected as well too. And us having common things, commonalities and stuff. I think that was really cool. And just having, I want to say, you're very personable and relatable, because this didn't even feel like we've been on the phone. I've been on this Zoom conference for an hour, because it just felt like we just talk and we're having a conversation. So I love that energy. You have really good energy. It made me feel very comfortable.
Thanks. It's like we're just talking over a piece of pound cake.
Right? That's it. Us over Nanny's banana pudding.
Yeah.
Yes. I thank you so much for having me on your platform.
Oh, you're so welcome, Chase, and take care.
You do too. Have a good one.
All right. Goodbye. Bye. I hope you enjoyed my interview with Chase Cassin, and that whatever you're doing for these holidays, celebrating Thanksgiving if you're in the U.S., and any other holidays you'll be celebrating between now and the end of the year, that you will take time to do some special cooking and baking, as Chase and I talked about. Maybe find an old favorite family recipe, or look up an ethnic or cultural recipe from your ancestors that might help you feel more in touch with those we have loved in the past who are no longer with us, those we still love, though they're not sitting at our table this year, and be able to honor loved ones far and near and departed as we sit together and celebrate and express gratitude for all the blessings that we have in life. For me, I'm not sure yet. I think I might try the pecan pie recipe from Chase for Thanksgiving. I have the cookbook, so although I've never made a successful pecan pie yet, I'm a little nervous about trying that, especially with when other people are going to be served, but the brownie recipe, that's very high on my list too. So I'm not sure which one I'll make first, but I guarantee you I'll be trying all the recipes in the book. And I hope you'll consider get the cookbook if you want to read more about New Orleans, some great recipes, and read Chase's advice from a grief therapist. Very touching, very so heart-centered, so authentic. And I hope that all came through in this interview that we shared together. Chase and I have decided that we are friends for life. And so it's amazing sometimes how the universe brings us together with just the right people to brighten our day. And I hope that's the case for you. I hope that you're finding plenty to be grateful for every day, and especially in a few days as we celebrate Thanksgiving together, at least here in the U.S. But everywhere, wherever you live, maybe you can use that day as well to express gratitude wherever you are. So if you enjoy listening to this content, I hope that you will take the time to subscribe or follow this podcast wherever you happen to be listening, whether it's Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher Radio, iHeartRadio, wherever you are. Be sure to subscribe and follow. That's how you'll get notified about every new episode. And then also leave a rating and review, because that will help us rise up in the rankings so more people will see this podcast when they're searching for this content. And you can also help out by recommending it to people that you think might enjoy listening to. You can send them an individual episode, or just let them know to go to eolupodcast.com. And you can go there as well, because you'll find this episode and all of the previous archives of this podcast, all 325 some episodes there. And you can listen to the interviews and you can read the show notes for every one of the past episodes. So I just want to let you all know once again, I'm grateful for all of you. Part of my Thanksgiving this year will include a blessing for all of you who are listeners out there, because I feel your energy. I love knowing that there are people who enjoy this. And again, those of you who have decided to step up and support with a small monthly donation on Patreon, I'm grateful for you as well, but also grateful to everyone who has sent me an email message or a message through Facebook or Instagram or Twitter, any of those social media platforms. It all means so much to me, and it really inspires me and keeps me going. And I can't wait to do the next episode for you. So I'll be back here with you next week. And until then, remember, we are here for love. You don't need to focus on anything else right now. Love is the most important thing that will get you through everything. So face your fear, be ready for whatever life brings you next, and just love each and every moment of your precious life. Bye-bye.